Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 184 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So this week, it is just Ginger. Summer was unable to join us. She had a massive case of the hiccups, which almost were alleviated at the last minute, but we decided to throw ourselves upon the mercy of our friend of the show, Candida, and she stepped in like a trooper and talk about last minute, like literally within the last hour, she's read quickly two chapters, and we hope, or I hope, since Summer's not here, that she has all the best ideas ever. No pressure.
No. Give me another hour. I'm not spicy like Summer.
So before we get to the announcements, you are saying how you had something that was for you a foolproof recipe or a foolproof tactic trick to get rid of the hiccups. Yes, tell us what that is.
Okay, so this came from my aunt, who's Vietnamese. I have no idea if this is some ancient Vietnamese secret, but it has worked for me my entire life. When I get the hiccups, I get a glass of water and I drink from it and I take 7 gulps of it without breathing. So you have to do it all, drink 7 gulps, and you take the glass away, and I swear it works every time. My hiccups are gone. It's kind of hard. The first time you do it, it's kind of hard. You're not able to breathe while you're doing it. So the first time I did it, it was really hard. But now I've got, like, when they come up, I just do it. And I, you know, not that I get hiccups that often, but I don't know. I'm very curious if anybody out there listening gets the hiccups and they try it and it works. I want them to tweet me or tweet Outlander Pod and say it worked.
That's interesting. The only thing I've tried, and I would say, I don't know if it's 100%. It was 100% for years, and then something happened and either I didn't commit or whatever. But something that I tried that, no joke, and I think it's it might be a mind thing, like a mind game, but it's similar to yours in that it has to do with, you're not holding your breath on purpose, but you're drinking for there is no minimum amount of time, but there's a method to it. And you, because of what you're doing, you have to hold your breath. So have you ever heard of drinking a glass of water upside down?
I have heard of that. I've never tried it because my aunt's was a little easier. Like, you could do it standing or sitting.
It does sound a little easier. So obviously you're not hanging upside down and drinking water, although that might work. You're basically taking a glass of water and you're bending over. And in order to make it work, you're almost drinking it backwards. Rather than it going down the back of your throat on the bottom, it goes down the top of your throat, like behind your nose and through on the roof of your mouth. And so I don't know if it's because your mind has to focus so much on, like, not drowning. Because you do have to think about it. It's a different way to drink. You're not used to it. And so, you know, you can do one sip, but I would just, like, get a glass and maybe, like, drink half of it upside down or whatever. No joke. That stuff works.
Used to work anyway. Well, mine.
Well, no, it still works. It's just like works. Once it's not 100%.
Oh, so, I see.
Yeah. It still works. It's my go-to, but it's not 100%. It's like 95%.
I've been lucky. Mine's been every single time. And
knock on wood right now, girl.
Oh, I know. I went and just jinxed myself. I'm going to have to start drinking 10 gulps.
Oh.
I'm going to pass out from breath.
Okay. So again, thank you so much. Literally, I texted you like 40 minutes ago. Hi, can you record? What?
It's a good way to, here's a little non-Outlander announcement. It's my birthday today.
Oh, so that's right. Happy
with you.
Aw, because I haven't talked to you in so long. I'm just kidding. happy birthday. Yay.
Thank you.
We did a little bit of an impromptu announcement, not really announcement, but we did like a PSA, how to get rid of the hiccups.
That's right.
From two different cultures. Okay.
That's
right. So the announcement of all announcements, and of course, by the time you listen to this, it's going to be a few days late, but that's how most of the announcements are on our show. Season 3 month has been announced. The premiere month, not a date, but at this point, dude, I'm just happy to be able to black out a calendar month. Oh my gosh. So tell our audience, tell our listeners, Candida, what exactly was announced today?
Season 3 of Outlander returns in September of this year. Yay!
And now we do not have an announcement for season 4, obviously. However, given that season 3 is not starting until September 2017, 13 episodes or 6, I know we have 13, but say it were 20, doesn't matter. There's no way on this earth that they would bring us season 4 in May of 2018. No. I just don't see it. So my guess is, since they've now set us up and they're pretty much, except for like, they'll have a break. I think they go through filming through June or whatever. I think I remember reading for season 3, but I think that they're having a little bit of a break, but I think they go right back into filming. Right. So they're going to be doing season 4 pretty quickly. And thus I sincerely doubt that, again, there's no announcements. There's no insider knowledge. This is just going on by what their pattern is. They're not going to turn around and give us the next season even earlier than before. It may be later, as has happened quite a few times now. It will not be earlier. So my guess is that since we know it's September 2017, my guess is no earlier than summer or fall 2018. But that's just my experienced Outlander fan, experienced Stars fan opinion. What do you think?
Well, I think it depends on how quickly they get back to shooting. And I don't even know. Is there talk of, I think there was earlier. It's all going to be filmed in and around Scotland, right? They're not coming to
I believe so. Right? We know that he wants to stay there as long as he can. Right. Yes.
Not that I think that would make a difference. Although there is a little bit because of the logistics. And right now they've got a very well-oiled crew. And if they were to come to the States, I mean, that's huge. That's a big deal. So, although we would love it, of course. But
Of course. So that's good news. We're all happy. And the reason, of course, besides the fact that we got the information, the reason I'm personally happy and Summer is happy, not just to have the information, but she's happy that I'm happy because I get a little twitchy-bitchy maybe. I'll go back a little bit. So as soon as season 2 ended, actually before it ended, you know, because you knew as soon as it was announced, you knew how many episodes there were. You may have been off by a week or two, depending on if they took a week off. So then you might be off by 1 or 2 weeks max. But you knew how long approximately the season was going to be and approximately when it was going to end. Well, that enabled us to look at Voyager. Look at all the chapters, look at how long they were, look at if it was like ridiculously short, like tonight, one of the chapters is 3 pages. That's why it went paired up with an 8-page chapter. And that makes a decent size little discussion. So we were able to take or create a schedule. Of course, it's not in stone, but at least to do something kind of projection. Now, if we had done even with little chapters put together, like really short chapters like that, put together with others, doing at a decent pace of a discussion a week, but almost a chapter a week, but not 100%, but almost, it was going to take us through June or July. And of course, we're like, that's too long. Right. It's going to start before then. And then like, you know, that's going to be even more because we may or may not travel. There's Comic-Con. There's just all these little things that are going to take away a possible week. Add on to it. So
now you have
reason. Exactly. So that's why earlier we knew that at some point, just like we did with season 2 and book 2, as soon as we got an announcement, we were going to have to either double up or, you know, triple up. We don't know. We were waiting for that kind of that benchmark or that like stick in the road. Finally, we have that. And it's almost 7 months away. So now we almost have the reverse problem. But again, to me, that's a good thing. I would rather have more because there are bulges up the jing jang that we could do if possibly. I'm happy to entertain that. But the good news is, because we were kind of doubling down and you may have seen our updated submission schedule for listeners who wanted to, contributors who wanted to contribute their comments for different chapters. That got crazy because we had to double up preparing for the quote unquote worst, which was, oh my gosh, if in case they come in April, which was, Oh my gosh. It was driving me bonkers. I was going to develop an ulcer. And then signs were kind of pointing toward, no, it's like January's passed, 2.5 weeks of two weeks of February now, and we still don't have a date. Both times that it's premiered, 1B and then season 2 in April, we've had a date by either the end of January or early February. So
now, when is Comic-Con?
It's usually the end or the third weekend in July. And this year it's the 20th through the 23rd.
So I did see something out there that because it's in during their break that
San Diego Comic-Con itself said that the Outlander is the first to officially confirm coming to Comic-Con.
Now, I'm sure you have tons of ideas and tons of suggestions, but I would love it if maybe you use the time when you finish at Voyager is perhaps to do at least one of the Lord John Grey novels because, you know, he's being introduced in this book. So, it'd be great to have some more background on him.
I agree. I think it's a unique opportunity. But to me, it's more important to do The Scottish Prisoner.
Which is longer.
That's true. But maybe what we could do is if we have The Scottish Prisoner, if it's not obscenely long, like it's too hard to put in with new weeks or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll be able to figure that out. Yeah.
But I'm open to doing something from Lord John. Again, if it's not too long, mm-hmm. maybe making that a chat. Like maybe we do a Google Hangout or something. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We still do like a read along, but a chat along, whatever. And we can maybe even break it up into two or three, but if it's just like where we read a few chapters and then come and chat about it, and maybe if I don't, or we, but by we, I mean me, right. don't have to do such deep reading and make it more of a true discussion than kind of a play by play, especially if we include people who are really knowledgeable of those books.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because trying to do Voyager and Scottish Prisoner,
I think you can do it, especially if it's a shorter book, and then maybe you could do two chapters a night or something, you know, something not a night. I mean,
a night, girl. I don't know what planet you're on.
I know. Come on, what's the problem? You can't do.
We're getting. Well, the problem. Well, it's there's a lot of steps to it, but anyway, I definitely am open to The Scottish Prisoner. I think that's vital. This is an exciting year. So there's. I'm happy I won't be developing an ulcer. At least if I do, it won't be from this. I'm just happy to have, I don't even care. I don't even care what day. I mean, I do and I will because there are other things happening in September, but I am just happy to have a month. Now, that's pretty much the biggest announcement we've had since, probably since the new year. Willoughby's great. Doctor, I don't know who I'm saying. Willoughby's great. Captain, what's his name? Charlie Hyatt is great, but what everybody wanted to hear was the premiere. I'm sorry. It's everywhere I went. It was always on. You are always on my mind. Yes, always on my mind. I'm just glad that door has closed as far as it's not up in the air. That's all. That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
So I'm happy. So thank you, stars. Thank you so much. And Sony, whoever did that, everybody. Okay, so we are here. I will take Summer's role tonight in this. It is time for the read-along. Tonight, Candida and I are discussing chapters 30 called Rendezvous and 31 called Smuggler's Moon. Chapter 30. They're on they, and by they, it is Jamie, young Ian, and Claire. But also they're there with Mr. Willoughby, and it's a group of men. It's not just like one or two people. They're on the road to Arbroath. As they made their way down, Claire couldn't help but enjoy watching Jamie go head-to-head with young Ian because it took them 4 days. This is not a quick little jaunt. It took them 4 days to get to Arbroath. And on this way, Claire is enjoying seeing Jamie basically butt heads with young Ian. And she's reminded of all the many years that she did just the same thing with their wonderful daughter, Brianna. And she's kind of I think she's a, yeah, I think she's just having a gay old time. And I remember, I think it was last chapter, may have been two chapters ago, I think it was last chapter, where they were talking about leaving, and she's like, Jamie said, okay, well, there's, you can go with me, but you and Ian are going to stay at this inn until we're all done.
Gosh,
and then we'll come collect. And then we'll come collect you.
After they got married and he told her she had to stay behind.
Oh, gosh.
He's trying to leave
which,
her behind.
Which time?
Never.
Which time?
When he, it's was for, going, when he was going to meet.
Oh, no, I know. But but what I'm saying is it's always happening. She's never staying put.
I know.
When's all the time.
It never works.
So the inn is no longer there. So he can't leave them anywhere. So young Ian and Claire were going to have to follow along. Jamie had to come up with a plan B. He says that they can go along with him, but only to the cliff's edge. And Ian is supposed to look after his aunt. And we know how that's going to work out.
Oh, and you know what? I just have to point out one correction. It's actually just the three of them because they don't get meet. They meet Willoughby and Fergus.
That's right. He's with the horses. That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, the horses in the cart.
Right.
After dark, the proper people were arriving at the appointed time. And Claire didn't recognize many of them, but she did recognize Fergus and Mr. Willoughby. They turned the wagon to Edinburgh, toward Edinburgh, so that when everything was done and they got the contraband, they'd be able to like take off right away in the right direction. No messing around in the dark, or no messing around after the fact.
Here's a stupid question for you. The contraband is whiskey, right? Are they picking up whiskey?
Either whiskey or brandy, yeah.
Okay, all right. So it's some kind of liquor.
One of the two, I think so. Now, we learned that they have something called a dark lantern. Now, because Claire was so fascinated by this, it made me think, oh, this must be like a special thing. I don't know. Like, I never learned about it in history. Claire was really impressed. Yeah, she was. And apparently, it's a lantern, and the sides of it are either metal, and so you can't see through them, or they're painted, or they're painted glass. It's whatever it is, it's dark, right? You can't see through it. But then when you're ready to use it, which they do later, you take off one of the sides, you light a candle or you light a wick. Oh, yeah, because it's an oil lamp, basically. I remember.
Well, they slide. I think
they slide. And I remember that when it exploded or when it was shot, it exploded with oil. So it's an oil lamp of some kind. So there must have been a wick. It's to keep the light hidden. So, yes, you don't light it until you're almost ready, but then when you're ready to give a signal, you don't like mess around and light it to give a signal. You have the light ready so that you can lift up the side and do your signal right then.
Now, what do you think the origin of a lamp like this is? Because if you create a lamp or any kind of light, it's because you want to
yes.
see. So who, besides smugglers?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know.
Somebody like Benedict Arnold would want, you know, to be able to close the light. I mean, is it smugglers who came up with this idea? Because it's not like they have to worry about, you know, lights out during a war.
That's true.
Or maybe it was. You know, for camps.
Let me see.
I'm kind of curious.
Let me see what comes up. Oh, okay. So according to this first hit here, so a dark lantern is a lantern with a movable panel that can be used to hide the light. And there are some pictures here. Oh, it's interesting. Yeah. Most of these are metal. I don't see a panel because they're round, but I guess you can have a panel on a round one. It's a lantern having an opening with a shutter that can be slid across the opening to obscure the light. So yeah, so definitely... They're saying the same thing. And yeah, they must be, because typically when you have a lantern, you don't want to hide anything. You want to see. You don't want to. That's
right.
Kind of the
yes.
It so, kind of defeats the purpose. So I agree. Right. So there must have, my guess is number one, because it's so odd. And number two, because Claire was so fascinated. My guess is that they have kind of a, not a stigma, but they have kind of a notoriety to them. Like, oh, smuggler. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I mean. But at the same time, I could possibly see somebody in the arm, you know, in somebody
oh,
military
sure.
using it.
Sure.
In the woods. I mean, you don't want your
enemy. Yeah, like spies.
You need to check a map or something like that. Yeah, exactly.
Spies or something.
So I guess I could see it being for noble reasons. And then,
oh, yeah.
Of course, the smugglers came along and go, hey, let's use this lamp. Just interesting.
It is. It actually, I think it is interesting.
Yeah, because even nowadays, if you think about it, do we have anything equivalent? You know, because now we have a flashlight or a torch. and they don't really come with
of obscuring
way other than your hand covering the light.
Yeah.
You know, I guess you just, I guess what we have now is night vision.
Oh,
so
yeah,
there
you go.
Need a lamp that opens and closes, but not all of us can afford night vision, although
that's
it's
true.
Probably a lot cheaper than it used to be. So, all right. So now we've probably bored the audience with that. So let's.
Willoughby was given the task of holding the lantern since he was the smallest of them.
And the most expendable.
I mean, probably that too, but also, but you know, it's, I mean, okay, I don't know about young Ian. We didn't get a mother not remembering it, or we weren't given it. It seems like Ian is not typically part of this posse.
Well, yeah, but this might be because, you know, we don't know how long he's been. Well, he's been in town for a couple of weeks. And so this is the first time probably that Jamie's had to do a run like this.
Yes.
While Ian has been.
That's what I meant. So since Ian is probably typically not with him, but we know Willoughby has been part of his posse for a little bit. So Willoughby knows how things work, and he's probably had this role before. And not only is Ian taller, because Diana made a point that it was his height and his size that made him a better person for this.
Right, because Claire even notices, you know, how much he stands out.
And so it's not just that he stands out, but it's that you don't want someone who's never done it before bungling everything.
Now, I kind of skipped over the last chapter, so I have a question for you. Is Ian there just because Jamie wants to keep an eye on him? Why didn't he just leave him at the brothel?
He told his father that he was going to take him back to Lallybroch.
Yeah. This back to Lallybroch.
Yes.
I mean, I still think leave him at the brothel, go do your thing, then go back and get him and then take him.
That may have actually been safer. Safer, but I think Claire, I don't know about not leaving him there, but Claire was like, you're not going to leave me around.
No, I can see Claire now. Yeah, obviously, she never stays put. She never does what she's told.
Well, it wasn't supposed to be a problem. There was supposed to be an inn where they could stay, but that inn burned down. So they're like, well, now we got to be here. So Jamie gives his final instructions to the men, and there seems to be something that Claire is sensing. She asks Jamie if he thinks anything is wrong, and he says he doesn't know, but then he asks her if she smells anything. She says no, and Jamie says he could have sworn he smelled gunpowder. So Jamie tells young Ian that if anything were to happen, he's to take Claire straight to Lallybroch. We find out that young Ian has a pistol with him, and he pulls it on Jamie. Because Jamie had walked away and he was coming back. And I think Ian was trying to protect them, him and Claire. And he's like, what are you doing? And Jamie tells him that, you know, it's a hanging offense to pull a weapon on a king's custom. And
so did he tell, I mean, all the men, because this is a regular run from them, they never bring, you know, arms. And I guess he didn't tell Ian that, or he told him.
He must not have, because remember, Ian wasn't supposed to be there. He was supposed to be at the inn.
Right, but it just seems like that would be an important thing to tell him.
I mean, I would
or
think
Jamie didn't even fathom that Ian would grab hold of a pistol.
And none of the men, and he says, not only is it a hanging offense to pull a weapon, like he's like, we don't even have a small knife among us, because in case one of us is taken and they find it, they could make up any charge. Right. So young Ian has an answer for that. He says, Fergus said they wouldn't hang me because my beard's not grown yet. I'd only be transported, he said. Oh, because that's so much better. Oh my goodness.
That's okay.
I mean, it's better than being killed, but still.
Thinking ahead. Yeah, because that won't really piss Jenny off. You got my son transported.
Exactly. And young Ian's gun was actually primed. And so that was the source of the gunpowder that he smelled. Oh, my goodness, Ian. Can't take you anywhere. Lisa T. writes, we are really getting to know young Ian and his insatiable sense of adventure. He is very much like Jamie, but more reckless. A possible reason for this is that Jamie was brought up to be Laird of Lallybroch and Ian was not. In any case, as the chapter unfolds, we see Ian as stubborn, reckless, and brave.
Oh my goodness.
There's a wee bit of foreshadowing in this, but mostly it continues to demonstrate wee Ian's recklessness, courage, and his determination to be a man young as he is.
Now, what is it you think that makes Ian more like Jamie than his own father, whereas young Jamie is more like Ian rather than Jamie? See, get that? The names are opposites?
Yeah.
Why do you think that's happening? Or, I mean, obviously we know why young Jamie is more like his father, because he's the oldest and he's being raised, you know, Lolly Brock is his, so he's been raised to be responsible for it. But why is Ian more like Jamie? Is it just because he, like you said, he's not responsible for Lolly Brock, and he has, you know, where's the sense of adventure that he has, that Lolly Brock is too small for him and he wants to see the world and be more like his uncle, really, than more like his father?
I think so, because as he grew up, he knew, or it's not that he knew, but his role was never going to be that of Laird. And so he didn't have that responsibility. So he, not that he shouldn't have, quote unquote, behaved, but he didn't carry that burden that his oldest brother, Jamie, did. And he was the youngest. He's the baby.
Do you think there's a sense of hero worship, perhaps?
Between him and Jamie?
And Jamie, yeah.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the uncle that's,
all of the kids had it. Had that when he was living in the cave. They were all worshiping him.
Yeah.
Fergus. Excuse me. Young Ian wasn't even born.
That's right.
So not
but
Ian,
he heard
no.
the stories.
Yes.
You know, so Jamie was a legend when Ian was growing up, and then he's working in the big city, and so that's exciting.
Yes. Oh, gosh, that too. So they catch sight of the French ship, and that's the one they're waiting for. So down below, they saw Mr. Willoughby's small stream of lantern light, so they could tell where he was standing. There was a flash of light across the rocks, and then nothing. And then another flash lit the wet sand. Claire says she thought she saw something half buried in the sand. So she's seeing something is kind of weird. And then there was a third flash. It was a blue light that came from the lantern on the ship in the water. I don't know. I don't think it was a harbor, but in the ocean. Claire had seen what looked like the things she saw, she thought she saw buried in the sand. They looked like heaps of clothing. And then they hear a faint splash and then the sound of something being thrown over the side of a ship. The anchors floated, and Claire was wondering how payment was supposed to be made when all hell broke loose below.
Now, what are the blue flashes?
I think it's blue. Maybe it could be through blue glass, I guess.
So you think it's the
entry. It must be, but it's from the ship, yeah. Jamie bound through the gorse bushes, followed by Claire and young Ian. They heard the words halt in the king's name. It was the excisemen. So there was a trap. And the hint or the warning that Sir Percival had given them to, you know, I would recommend not going, was actually he was telling the truth. So Jamie yells some Gaelic out to his men and then tells Claire and young Ian to get going. There are screams and noises coming from all around them. And I love this line, quote, ignoring Jamie's order to go, we both crowded toward the pier through the screen of gorse. So Claire's like, young Ian was like, no. And Claire's like, F that, I'm not going to go. So they're both like, let's go get a seat and watch.
Poor Jamie.
I know. That's what I mean.
Like, won't do anything he tells him to do.
Nothing.
Constantly getting
exactly.
in trouble.
That's too much.
To turn his red
exactly
gray.
The lumps on the beach that Claire had seen were customs men who'd buried themselves in the sand. I mean, talk about committed. Good Lord.
Really?
I mean, I wouldn't do that. That's too much.
Cold.
That's sand gets everywhere.
Well, 50 pounds, right? What was it? Isn't it 50 pounds?
Huh?
That's
oh, yes,
thing.
Yes.
And that's just for Jamie, not including the small
That's
fish.
True. Ian tries to get involved, and Jamie pulls him up short and reminds him to get going with Claire. Claire was not about to leave, however. Jamie knelt and prepared to fire his pistol. He shot the lantern. It exploded its burning oil.
Oh, is it... I'm sorry. Is he shooting the pistol? Is it pistol he took away from Ian, right?
It must be. It must
he's
have been the one he took from Ian because they didn't bring him. Yeah. So he shot the lantern, and so the light goes out, but it, of course, explodes oil everywhere, and one dude is on fire. Jamie disappears through the gorse, and Claire's worried about Jamie, but finally young Ian is doing his job, getting his aunt away, and she follows him away from the scene. They make it to the road to Arbroath, and she removes her shoes and stockings as to make the going easier. It was November, so freezing. They'd just gone through an icy stream up to her knees. I could Oh my gosh, I could not imagine.
Oh my gosh. And then she's always wearing that heavy dress. It's like those dresses, those wet dresses would drag
her
down.
This is funny. It's not the exact same at all, at all. However, if you want to compare times where, and she was a lot safer here, obviously, but if you want to compare times where he's ordered her or asked her to stay put while he goes and does something, mm-hmm. and she is like, I don't think so, right? And she disobeys, basically. In Outlander, when that happened right after they were married, of course, when she left and walked around, the way that she was found before she was taken to BGR is she fell into a stream and almost drowned.
That's right.
Okay, so there's water involved. Yeah, well, symbolism, yes, but also symmetry or comparison, because here she's going through water again, but she's not like drowning, and she's not going underwater. She's only into up to her knees, right. So she's a lot safer, but it still is, again,
I guess it's just telling us Scotland is wet.
Oh my gosh, yes.
No matter where you go, there's like always seems to be an annoying stream.
They almost run into two men who are just kind of hanging out by the road, and Ian stops them up short. I think it's Ian. Ian stops them up short before they actually get there. But they're kind of they're like stop, and they're listening. And these two men are talking about waiting and capturing someone or something and getting the head money.
The big fish.
Yeah, exactly. Young Ian and Claire listen to them, and it turns out they're looking for Jamie. The person that they're looking for has red hair. And he's the big fish. The meeting point was, young Ian tells Claire, the meeting point was Arbroath Abbey. If something were to go wrong, it was every man for himself in his own time, as fast as they could, but in his own way, to make it to the Abbey, because that was where they would meet if anything went wrong. And young Ian is torn between going to the Abbey to warn the remaining men who have gone away to meet there, and taking Claire straight to Lallybroch, because now all hell's broken loose. And the reason he's kind of on the fence about this is because these two men who were talking about, who were hanging out, talking about wanting to capture Jamie, were mentioned the Abbey. So they knew about this. And so he was like, I got to get away and go warn these people who are waiting in a potential trap. So he was like, what do I do? They talk about it. And Claire's like, you go there. I'll stay here, or I'll walk down the road, and I'll, you know, I can kind of take care of myself at least a little bit, because there, if I make enough noise, you know, I'm a female. I'm probably the one person who's going to maybe not be hurt, maybe captured.
Now, did they know that that was the rendezvous, or these two guys that are out in the bushes just made comment that there's more of them waiting at the Abbey. Was it just, maybe that was just kind of like a staging area, if that's where they started?
Yeah, because one said, it's, I wish I had drawn straws to be at the Abbey.
Assigned
exactly,
to the
Abbey. Exactly, because it's warmer there.
Yeah, I think they knew about where the smuggling was happening, but I don't think they knew where the fallback position was or where the rendezvous point was, not necessarily. Because I mean, who would have told them? None of Jamie's men.
Well, then why would they be watching the Abbey at all?
Because I don't think they were watching in the Abbey. They said that the watch was at the Abbey, not watching the Abbey. I think they were just a couple of the guys that were waiting, or maybe they were the backup or something like that. I just don't get the impression that they were.
I don't think they knew the whole game.
I'm just saying, I mean, unless they knew, let's go down there, and if things screw up, we know where they're going to end up. Well, you know, why not just all be there waiting? But anyway.
I see what you're saying, because if they knew that there was a backup, then they could have just staged an oh crap and then waited for everyone to go back.
Exactly. Instead of this chasing and running around.
Well, they knew something about the Abbey. Yeah. They may not have known that it was the backup, but they knew that there was something going on, even if it was just as some people from the team were there, because an organized plan, certain people mm-hmm. were stationed at different places, and these two, or at least one of them, said he wished he had gotten the Abbey. So there was some knowledge that, if not the importance of the Abbey, that it was the backup, that at least it was involved, or that people had a tendency to hang out there or something.
I guess I thought maybe it was just the closest building nearby, and so everybody was you thinking that it was a great place to rendezvous.
It sounds like both sides. Oh, and it was only, and it wasn't far. It was like a mile.
Building around.
And Ian,
You know, let's go to the Abbey. Exactly, like a mile and a half away.
Claire tells him to go to the Abbey and try and save as many men as he could. He leaves Claire alone in the dark, and Claire decides to just walk along the road. She goes, I could either walk on the road or I can stay on the side and try and hide. And either way, if I hide and I surprise somebody else, then the chances of me getting shot are higher. So she decides to just walk along the road and try to attract the attention of some of those who are lying in wait. Eileen P. writes, how is Jamie going to get through this story when neither Ian nor Claire follows his orders?
I don't see how that is a good plan for her to walk out in the open.
Oh, no. If he starts pulling his hair out, I'll bet he'll be bald by the end of the book. Lisa T. writes, they are ambushed by excisemen. Jamie entrusts Ian with Claire. In an ironic twist, Claire tells Ian that he must think for himself. Martina P. writes, I think this chapter demonstrates how Jamie, Claire, and young Ian are quite the match in stubbornness. Claire is given clear instructions by Jamie, and once again she feels compelled to take matters in her own hands. Young Ian has such an adventurous heart and refuses to be sidelined. He definitely wants a piece of the action. He is very much like his uncle and has more in common with Jamie than his own father. I do love to watch the growing closeness between Claire and Ian and how she kisses him before he leaves for the Abbey. That's very sweet.
Yeah, everything.
Everything. Yeah, I know. Everything. Every darn thing. And now, chapter 31, Smuggler's Moon. It was less than 2 weeks past Samhain. So it's, and I think she said earlier in chapter 30, it's like 2 days past the new moon. So it's just barely a sliver of any kind of light. Mm-hmm. She's walking along, rock in hand, and she's grabbed from behind. A hand is clamped over her mouth, and she flips a bitch. She then bites one of the dude's fingers. He finally lets go, and she turns and knees him in the stones. And then a man says, is that you, Sassenach?
I love that she takes the time as she's biting down on this person's hand. She knows is the maxillary.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know how you pronounce the sagittal crest at the top of the skull to an insertion on the mandible. I mean, that's a lot of thinking when you're biting down.
I love it.
And you're saying, for your life, you know, because you're thinking you're about to, you know.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
I just thought that was so hilarious. It's so
Diana. It is so Diana, who's just, you know.
And I can just like. When I was reading that part of it, I was just like, I'm starting to read, unless I read the book out loud, as I'm reading it, I hear Diana's voice in my head reading this book to me instead of Davidia's, because I've actually only ever listened to excerpts of it. I've never listened to a whole book. Maybe if I did, I would hear her. But I only hear Diana's voice now reading this to me.
Well, I could especially understand hearing Diana's voice when it talks about like anatomy and stuff, because that's her background.
Right. And especially, you know, when it's
exactly,
Claire.
Exactly.
Because I've been at enough events where she's read excerpts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, her voice is just so distinctive, but absolutely when it's Claire and it's something like this, she just really comes through.
Totally. So it turns out that Fergus had grabbed her as well. She tells Jamie not to talk, that there are excisemen ahead. Jamie then does his magic and starts to call his men by name. And he's like, oh, are there really? And it turns out they're all there, most except for like one or two of them. And he doesn't know what she meant by there are a few excisemen around. Well, she tells him what she'd heard. He goes down the road to check it out, and he comes to a point and stops, and there are gasps all around them. Two men have been hanged from a tree, and it was an alder tree. I did look it up to see if there's any like symbolism, and well, the funny thing is, anything? I mean, I'm sure there's symbolism for everything, and I didn't have, you know, hours to look it up, but one of the things I found is it's very common in Ireland and Scotland. They're very common near water. So that's why, you know, they just went through a stream. So that we know there's water. Well, in Scotland, there's water. You can't, like, you know, spit around with a cat. You're going to hit a stream somewhere or burn, whatever that phrase is. I totally butchered that. And also, I thought it was interesting that alder wood becomes almost petrified in water. It's very, very strong. Hmm. But if you take it out of water, it doesn't last as long. Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. So these two men, these were the men that Claire had seen. Claire and Ian had seen and heard. They were excise men, but they had been hanged. So, I wonder what did that.
Yeah, you know, I wonder why nobody heard anything.
That's the thing.
And that could not have been a quiet thing to capture these men and then hang them. There had to have been struggles and maybe even yelling, unless it's possible they knocked them out or they weren't gagged or anything. So, yeah, I just don't know why nobody heard anything when this happened. And they weren't that far from, plus, I don't know how long these guys, they couldn't have been hanging there that long. So, yeah, I wonder what the logistics are of that, such that they didn't hear
it. And he searches their clothes and he finds that one of them had a warrant and he finds out the guy's name. And basically, we already know this because the party broke up. They're all reconnecting or they're all meeting here when Jamie was calling their names. They all came out of the woods or out of the woodwork, if you will, to come up and meet again. So they had kind of scattered, scattered a little bit. And this operation at least was a bust. And there was no bounty. And by bounty, I don't mean the price on Jamie's head. I mean, there were no winnings. There were no earnings that night.
There's no booty. No booty and no
exactly. Pay. And Jamie offers to help some of them out because they were supposed to be getting some kind of payment that night, if everything had gone smoothly. And Jamie knows that some of them were probably depending on it. And he said, "Look, I can help you out with some living expenses if you need some help for a while, because we won't be working this coast for a while. We need to keep it
worse than just losing
exactly.
Out.
We need to keep it low and slow for a while, kind of keep
going the down.
Yeah."
Low.
A few minutes later, it's just Jamie and Fergus and Claire. Fergus asks, who would have done the hanging? And Jamie says, well, it doesn't really matter because he'll likely be accused of it.
Oh, wait a minute. What happened to Willoughby? Where is he? Oh, right. He's down the road. Sorry.
Claire said that Ian had gone to the Abbey to warn Jamie or any other men who were there. And Jamie says that that's funny because he had just come from that direction and didn't run into him. It turns out Ian had gone the wrong way. Keeping it real with the humor, Diana. Oopsie. And he and Jamie trusted him to get Claire to Lallybroch. Claire home. Yeah. And he can't get to 1.5 miles away.
Lallybroch probably was in the direction opposite from the Abbey, so he would have ended up getting her home.
And they go back to where Willoughby is waiting with the horses. And it is time for them to leave. No, they're leaving for Lallybroch, right? Right away.
Part 7. That's right. Okay. Yeah, home again.
If I'm not mistaken, there's a part 7. Maybe it's not 7, but isn't there a part 7 in Outlander called Lallybroch? Or Dragonflight number. There's something somewhere. I thought it was a part 7 called Lallybroch. I could be wrong, but I just thought it was funny. Eileen P. writes, didn't Jamie say something earlier about things just happening when Ian as well as Claire are around? It looks like we're in for quite an adventure. Further, regarding self-defense 101, she says, nice to know Claire can defend herself even in a long dress. Poor Fergus taken out by a Sassenach.
It is true. When Jamie's on his own, he doesn't have to worry about
anything.
That's true. I don't know if they always go smoother, but having Claire along, there's always something that seems to go wrong, and now he's got Ian not paying attention, and I don't really know that anything goes wrong with. I mean, Fergus is more like Jamie. He's very devious. He's very not that young Ian's not smart, but he's younger and he's less experienced. And Fergus has, been with Jamie for so long. And plus, being on his own and having to support himself and being a pickpocket and a little thief.
Oh, yeah.
So Fergus can take care of himself. And I don't think he's ever been a burden to Jamie. I'm not trying to, I feel like I'm putting my foot in my mouth. Like I'm saying Claire and young Jamie are burdens, but they're a little more burdensome than
you could
Fergus.
Say they are.
Fergus is more like his right arm. You know what I mean?
Children are burdens. They're lovely. But if you don't have any kids, it's a lot easier going. You have human children. The more people, things too, I guess, but I hope not. I hope it's hard to say with things. But the more humans, especially children, you have attached to you who depend on you, you do have more to worry about. Absolutely.
And I think Claire does kind of cross eventually cross into a, I don't know what the word, she eventually crosses a line, because right now she's kind of a burden because she's newly back in his life and she's got to, she has to find a place for him. But then eventually she does become, you know, very like a,
she can look out for herself,
more of a part,
more of an asset. Basically. Exactly.
Exactly. And, you know, especially during the Revolutionary War.
Absolutely.
I mean, she's just, she's
once right, they get to, I mean, don't get me wrong. There's always, because she's a woman, there's always different threats that she faces compared with Jamie. However, I think she really comes into her own. There's no spoilers here. She really comes into her own once they get to the Ridge. That's where she, not even just the Ridge. Once they, once they get to the New World, she, well, the colonies, not Jamaica. Right. Once they get landed, for real, she really comes into her own and she starts to own her everything. Yeah. Lisa T writes, even though the cargo is lost, we see Jamie step up like he always does and take care of his men. We see Ian truly looking out for his uncle and, of course, his Auntie Claire. But we also see Jamie is still trying to protect wee Ian. It's a metaphor for their relationship. And Martina P. writes, I love how Jamie is in control of the situation. It's very Laird-like. Once again, his main concern is for his men. No profits to share, and he still pays them with what he can spare. Now we are off to Lallybroch, and who knows what other adventure is awaiting us there. Well, we know. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
It's a big old pile of poo.
It's like nothing goes
nothing
right.
is fun. But to me, the most exciting thing, well, it's not that exciting. I like it because there's not necessarily a reason that Diana has to tell us everything. The stuff that she does tell us makes perfect sense because it's used. But I'm always curious what people who know about it, obviously, bring through with them. So like we know she brought those peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, which she went through pretty quickly.
Right.
And we will find out pretty soon other stuff that she brought with her. But I'm wondering if she brought, besides the dress, she brought some sandwiches and the other things we're going to learn about. Is that it? Yeah.
Weapon.
I think it's interesting.
Well, and I know this is kind of, because I wasn't part of the print shop chapter, I have to tell you that every time I read that chapter, I know this is silly, and it really bothers me that she throws that plastic down and just, you know, one, being a litter bug, and two, it's just, I don't know, she couldn't have wrapped her sandwich in paper or something like that that was more, you know, conforming to the time instead of plastic wrap. That's always bothered me, and I always wondered if there was some significance to that. You know, why was that chosen? I mean, even, I don't know.
Well, Summer corrected me, and she was correct, or she corrected me, but she reminded me of what it actually was. It's still plastic, don't get me wrong, but it is, it's not like a plastic baggie. It's not a plastic baggie. It's...
No, I know it's not a Ziploc bag.
Well, it's,
yeah, I know. I always imagine like a piece of Saran.
Exactly, like a cling film or something.
It just seemed like it would have been better to wrap it in something that was, you know, even wax paper or just paper. Yeah. That would be funny if it had been a Ziploc bag. Or aluminum foil. That would have been something crazy.
Yeah. So that was chapter 31. So thank you, Candida, for joining us, or joining me, especially on such late notice.
My pleasure. My
so
pleasure.
You know what this means? There's precedence now. I mean, I can't expect you to read like a 30-page chapter quickly, but
I'm a pretty fast reader.
You are. Well, that's good. Yeah, plus you know the stories. But
right.
Thank goodness.
I mean, I did read the whole thing, but you know, I could I was able to skim a little bit here and there, like just because I just had to refamiliarize myself with it.
That's fair.
So, yeah, next time if it's a 40-page, can you give me like an
hour?
Oh,
dude. The only problem, yeah, absolutely. The only problem is with that would be if, God forbid, I waited this long to that late to ask you. I don't know that I'd be awake that long because I, you know what I'm saying? Because the longer it goes before I start, and that's not even saying much. It's not really fair because you're 3 hours ahead of me, so that's even later. So join us next time when we start part 7 called Home Again, with chapter 32. The Prodigal's Return. Thank you as always so much for listening.
We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @outlanderpod.